Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I am your host, Laura Reeves, and it's coming up on the first Monday of the month, so that means that we're going to talk to Dr. Marty Greer, and we're going to talk about puppies, because we're doing that all year this year, so I know it's very exciting. And today we decided that we're going to talk about that kind of four-week period when the puppies' brains are just exploding, and some of the things that we should be looking for, some of the things that we should be doing, not doing, things like that. Pure Dog Talk is proudly sponsored by Trupanion, medical insurance for the life of your pet. As a breeder, you know all too well how curious puppies can be. Unfortunately, sometimes that curiosity can get them into trouble. Help protect your litters against the unexpected by sending them home with a special go-home day offer as part of the Trupanion Breeder Support Program. This offer provides immediate coverage upon activation for new accidents and illnesses, so each pet is protected in their new home. Additionally, Trupanion has no payout limits and is able to pay the veterinarian directly at the time of checkout, which means less out of pocket for the new owner. Want to learn more? The Trupanion Breeder Support Program is completely free to join and available for breeders in the US, Canada, and Australia. Getting started is quick and easy. Just follow the link on my partner page at puredogtalk.com to get started. All right, guys, whether you're a first-time breeder or a seasoned veteran, it's not just a litter, it's your legacy. Each puppy represents your hard work, your dedication, and it shows your commitment to the next generation. Revival is honored to support you every step of the way. You can find everything you need to support your litters and the health of your dams and sires with Breeders Edge, Revival's premium line of reproductive and neonatal health products. Breeders Edge was actually developed with the help of our very own Dr. Marty Greer, Revival's Director of Veterinary Services, and a leading expert in canine reproduction and neonatal care. Breeders also rely on Revival, the pet vaccine experts, for vaccine selection and safe shipping to give their litters the protection they need. Revival's online pharmacy serves breeders with a wide variety of prescription medications, plus a knowledgeable staff that's always ready to answer any questions. Grow your own healthy legacy with help from Revival Animal Health. And check this out, one time only, $15 off your order of $99 or more by using the code PODCAST15. You can use this code by calling 800-786-4751 or stopping by www.revivalanimal.com. So, welcome, Marty. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Thank you. I love talking about puppies. So,
well, we I'm both so do, glad so it makes it really fun.
Yeah. Yeah. This is really a great series. So it's going to be very helpful for people to go through the whole thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So we got them through 3 weeks. Their eyes are open. Their ears are open. We've done their ENS. We've done their early scent introduction. And now they're to that, you know, Weeble's wobble stage, right? They kind of teeter around and they kind of play wrestle. And yeah, I mean, it's the biggest damn thing in the world, right? 4 weeks is
they
the
fall over.
Stage.
Yeah. They growl at each other and then they fall over and they think they're really tough. It's a blast to watch.
And they crawl on you with their little puppy paws. It's the best. So where are their little puppy brains right now? What do we know about that?
Well, there's probably a lot we don't know about that, but they are definitely just developing so fast. There's so much of the world that they're suddenly taking in and they've got to start to learn to encounter it. It's pretty great. So there's a couple things here. One of the things that has stuck with me that I learned from Ann Bowes is when the puppies first open their eyes, first open their ears, we should have gentle lighting. We should have gentle sounds. We shouldn't just have this, you know, loud TV with Rambo on, and like my husband did under the crib of my daughter when she was a baby. So, you know, things like just have the lights starting to come up. Their vision isn't great. Their hearing isn't great, but it went from almost nothing to something. And so we wanted ease them into that world. Now, they do have the ability to blink with a bright light even before their eyelids are open. So they do have some sensory prior to opening. And the other thing that's really interesting to me is I had a litter of puppies, unfortunately, I learned the hard way. I had a litter of puppies that all had cataracts, severe cataracts. Not a genetic problem in my breed. The entire litter was affected. We have no idea where it came from. I went to three ophthalmologists and no one could really give me an answer. But they said that taking out the cataracts surgically, because I was willing to spend the money on it, they said it won't make a difference because their visual pathways have already formed. And so it's too late for them to start connecting those things in their brain. So taking the cataract out and making their eye visual doesn't mean that they are going to be visual because they won't connect the neurons. So I didn't know that. And I'm still struggling a bit to really understand that and understand where my cataracts came from because we've never produced any of them since. It was just the most unusual thing. And of course, I got advice from one ophthalmologist that said, repeat the breeding and see if you get it again. I'm like, I don't think so. And the other one said, the other one was old school. He came back as far as back when Merle to Merle test breedings were done. And he said, we'll do a mother-son breeding and see what happens. And I'm like, no, because the dog lived with my technician. My daughter was still at home. She was in high school. And both of them looked at me like, are you out of your mind? I'm like, no, I'm not doing it. Don't worry. But those are the tools that we were given to try to determine what this was. So you can get some interesting, unfortunately, I know this because unfortunately I had that experience.
Lived it. And talk to me about, and it may be we need to go back to my ophthalmologist on this one. There is a type of cataracts that we see, just kind of spinning off on that just for half a second, that I am told come from when puppies are bottle fed. Is that a thing
yes.
that you know about?
That is a thing. They're nutritional cataracts, and a really great ophthalmologist can tell a nutritional cataract from a regular inherited cataract. I don't know the difference. I'm not a great ophthalmologist, but they can.
Talk to my ophthalmologist.
And it's usually, it's usually an amino acid deficiency. It's usually arginine. I think it's arginine and lysine, I think, are the two, but I could be wrong. So don't quote me on that.
I just wanted to make that note. There is such a thing, and I have actually run into it. So my hard-won experience. That there are times that you can see cataracts from puppies that were bottle fed. So,
right. So make sure you're using a commercially produced puppy formula and not goat's milk. Mm-hmm. A goat's milk based formula is fine, but they add those additional amino acids into the puppy formulas like Esblack, Foster Care, all those have those in. So be sure you're using that. I like goat's milk from the perspective of the weight gain and the lack of diarrhea that you get, but you get nutritional cataracts. So just don't go there.
Got it.
You don't need that.
Got it. Perfect. Okay. So 4 weeks, brain's exploding. What are some of the things you do? I know I have at that point, so we also talked about this when we were planning the episode, speaking of nutrition, at that point, most of my puppies are ready to start eating. So that's one of the first things that I'm doing at around that 4 week time frame because they're starting to get little puppy teeth and my wire hair pointers are like, yeah, no, I'm not so much about this anymore.
Weaning is a forced experience because of the teeth. Yeah. But different breeds have different capacity and different individuals within the breed do.
Right.
My corgis, by the time they're 3 and 4 weeks old, are like your wire hairs. They're pushing them away saying, you have teeth, get away from me. You're a little monster. You're a little piranha.
Vampire.
Go over and drink and eat on your own. I'm done with you. My farm dogs, on the other hand, are great mothers. They will nurse those puppies until they're 8, 9, 10 weeks old. Not as a full-time job, but until the puppies are 6 weeks old, they won't even look at food in a bowl. I can put it down and the mom eats it because the puppies are like, what's that? I'm not doing that. I have a mommy and I'm going to keep nursing on mommy. So it depends. I think Cavaliers, you know, a lot of those Spaniel dogs are really great. You get the Terriers. They're a little bit less willing to let dogs do that. Now, years ago, it was a Saturday afternoon. I was driving and I got a phone call on my cell phone from a client. And she said, I need to talk to you about my sister's dog. I think the dog has mastitis. And, you know, I was already out of the office. It was Saturday afternoon. I'm like, oh, well, what makes you think it's mastitis? And she said, well, she has a lab and she has puppies. There are 12 of them. And she won't lay down and let the puppies nurse anymore. And I said, well, how many puppies are there? She said, 12. And I said to her, so how are you feeding them? And she said, feeding them? And I said, you said they're 6 weeks old? And she said, yeah. And I said, your food, you're not putting food in a bowl? She goes, no. I said, well, how about water? And she said, water? And I went, oh no, this poor dog has 12 puppies that are 6 weeks old, and they have received not one other drop of fluid or nourishment from anything other than. I can tell you why she's not laying down to nurse these puppies anymore. I'm surprised she hasn't killed them all. Yeah. So literally, you know, just gotten on them. So I start water pretty young, sometimes as early as 2.5 to 3 weeks old, based on how the puppies are nursing, how they're gaining, how developed they are. Because even in litters, you're going to see developmental differences. Puppies aren't premature, but some are slower developing than others. So we want to give them the opportunity. So I put out a really shallow, heavy dish, like a Pyrex pie plate or Pyrex cape pan, really young, and start these guys so that they have the access to water if they're interested. So I start young, and I have weaned puppies at 12 days of age when I've had to because of mastitis, because of a bitch being sick and needing to get the puppies onto something more. Now, a lot of veterinarians will tell you that the bitch can't nurse the puppies when she's on an antibiotic, and that's generally not true. Very little antibiotic goes into the milk, so in most cases, they can continue nursing. Sometimes they have, you know, an open wound from the mastitis, so you need to cover it, but most of the time we can do that. So as early as 12 days, before their eyes are open, if you put a canned food, starter mousse, Purina puppy, something on a really flat, shallow plate, those puppies will smell it and will motor over to it, and they'll walk around in it. They're not very neat, but they will start ingesting solid food at 12 days if necessary.
The earliest I have done is 3 weeks. I had a disastrous litter. I've had so many disastrous litters, but this particular one was really bad. And, you know, completely bottle feeding a litter of six. And I'm like, mm-hmm. The minute they can eat solid food.
Oh, yeah.
And so,
oh, yeah.
2.5, 3 weeks. Yep. Sure enough.
Right. That's food and water. And it really is highly variable. You need to keep introducing it until they're ready and realize some puppies are going to drop behind because they're just not as ready as others. So you can't assume that just because the big puppy in the litter is ready to eat that all of them are. So be sure that you're giving access as needed.
The other thing I always think and have always practiced, my puppy gruel comes in, number one, warm, not cold. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. number two, and I was sharing a social media post about this with my last litter, just educational piece. Basically, my puppy starter food is the consistency of dog vomit. Because mm-hmm. in the wild, that's how they wean their puppies. They throw up for them. And mm-hmm. so it's warm water and soaked mashed kibble and mm-hmm. a little bit of maybe tiny bits of raw ground up meat or yogurt or cottage cheese or whatever it is. And it's not the thin soupy gruel. Like, we're not trying to make them drink, right? Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. And so I think that a lot of people struggle with this. I think back to the litters that we had when I was a kid, right? With the labs, my mom's feeding that terrible Gerber rice cereal stuff, and they were glued to each other. It was gross.
Yeah. Gross. Well, I do use that for diarrhea, but I don't use it for anything else because it is really gooey and messy stuff. So it is interesting. But, you know, there's just so many variables here that you can't just say hard and fast that this is going to work. Some puppies need a different texture. And remember, if you've never seen a video of the dogs drinking water, it's a really interesting video. So if you've never seen it, Google dog drinking water slow motion and look at how they flip their tongue under and throw the water up into their mouth. It's no wonder a puppy can't take in that kind of thin formula because they haven't developed that skill set yet of flicking the tongue and tossing the water in the back of their throat. So do something a little bit more solid. Now, I pre-soak my puppy food when I go from starter mousse to the kibble. I pre-soak it. I put it in the refrigerator with either my milk replacer, depending on the age of the puppy, or warm water on it, and then pull it out and put it in the microwave just enough to take the chill off, not to cook it. But I don't have time to stand around and watch the kibble soften. It's like watching grass grow. I don't have time for that. So I've always got one batch ahead in the fridge. So I'm putting a batch in as I'm taking the batch out. Yep. So it's fresh. It hasn't been sitting in water at room temperature for an extended period of time. And we do have to be careful with hygiene. So those are some tips that you can do to keep things moving. And I don't microwave my baby formula like my foster care. But in this case, I'm just taking the chill off enough so that it does smell better when it smells better to the dogs. I'm not sure it smells better to me. but it has more of an aroma when it's got some heat to it, and that also is attractive to the dogs. So those are some little things that you can do if you have puppies that are a little slow on the uptake to get them going, because we need to get them started on solid food so the little critters will eat and take the burden off of mama.
To your point about your water dishes, and I think this is super important for people to understand, flat means that way the puppy doesn't drown. Because I have personally had wire hair pointers bail out of the whelping box right into the water bucket. Now, I happen to be standing there when it happened, but I'm saying.
Yeah, we took care of a lab puppy named Splash because we don't know how long she was in the water bucket when she was discovered. She survived, but if she'd been anything, it turns out I've had two puppies of my own fall into a pool on different occasions. Turns out 4-week old puppies can swim. It's a good thing, because otherwise I'd have been in after them. But you don't want to check that. No. It should be shallow. And then when they start going outside, or if I'm concerned about them getting in the water, I use a chicken waterer because that keeps the water flowing and clean. And you can get those at the farm stores or online. Those work great. And then I teach a Lixit bottle as early as I can as well. So I hang a Lixit bottle on the X-Pen. You can build a stand for them. I've seen them online where you can have a stand built with PVC tubing and a platform at the bottom. And all you do is put some peanut butter or chicken baby food, squeezed cheese, something, cream cheese, on the tip of the water bottle nipple. If you've never seen them, when they look like a giant gerbil bottle, they come in a 64 size, so you don't have to fill them every 20 minutes. And that way the puppies have access to water. Now, you can't let that be the only water source until you've assured yourself that the puppies all know how to drink, because some puppies don't catch on as others. You know, developmentally, not every puppy's the same in your litter.
Right.
So just be cautious that everybody knows how to drink, everybody knows how to eat before you start making assumptions about that, because we don't want to lose a puppy to that bit of information.
Dehydration, right. Well, and it's a good point that you bring up. A lot of the toy breeders and people with smaller breeds, I wouldn't use a Lixit bottle because the wire hairs would just rip it off the fence and run away with it. It's not a thing. But it's a really good point to make for people that are starting their dogs on those type of watering devices, that that's when and how to start them. So,
And it's really handy because then when you travel, they know how to use it. You don't have water sloshing around in the crate. If you go to a hotel, they don't have water all over the bathroom floor. So it's just a really handy tool to teach puppies to use. I raised 6 dogs for Canine Companions for Independence. And they have those in the hose bibs in all the runs for the dogs. So when the dogs are first dropped off and they've been in their home that raised them, like we had for the first 18 months of their life, and then they put them in a run with a sibling, they say, okay, well, there's this Lixit thing and they're going to have to learn how to use it. My first dog that I raised was a golden retriever, and in no way was he a bright dog. He was a lovely dog. He was a great service dog because he put up with everything. Not a smart dog. And she said, he's going to have to learn to use it. And he walked over and started looking at it. And she goes, oh, well, I guess he's got it. So some dogs catch on to it more quickly than others. Just don't assume that everybody's got the same developmental skills.
Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute. All right, crew, check it. The results are in, and 96 of the 100 top all-breed show dogs in 2023 are fed ProPlan. The high-performance food is made with 30% protein and 20% fat to fuel the metabolic needs of an active, keenly motivated show dog, while maintaining lean muscle. The owners and handlers of these top champions choose to feed ProPlan because it delivers concentrated nutrition to optimize oxygen metabolism for increased endurance, a pivotal part of campaigning a show dog. ProPlan promotes nutrition for joint health and mobility and for healthy skin and coat. The ease of feeding one of the ProPlan All Life Stages formulas that provide complete and balanced nutrition for puppies to senior dogs is an added bonus. Try ProPlan and see why more owners and handlers of top show dogs choose it. Visit purina.com/ProPlan/dogs to learn more about the number one dog food of show dog owners and handlers in 2023. And I think that's an important segue to the next topic. As we're talking about, their brains are exploding. We have some important, I just want to make sure that we're holding up Marty's book, right? For those of you who have not actually purchased it yet, this is the book. See the sticky note? There's a fabulous chart here in this sticky note, and I will put this in the show notes for you guys on the website. But it has a really wonderful chart of where the puppy should be sort of physically from weeks 1 through 6. And I think that that's a super great reference for people. And the ability to get up and be on their legs and play, talk to us about, and I know what I do, in terms of making their enclosure more challenging, right? We're starting to push their capacity to be agile, to solve problems, to do all of those sorts of things.
So I try to do a lot of variation in the enclosure. I have a rabbit hutch, a literal rabbit hutch that's got 2 stories, a ramp on it, so they can go in and out of doors and up and down the ramp. I have all kinds of little beds that have holes and places for them to go. Honestly, the best toys are the kids' toys that I pick up at garage sales.
Yes.
Or on the side of the road. Yeah, people throw them away. They just put them out of the curb.
Yep.
So I'll just stop, and I'm sure they're like, who is that person in that black van? She's crazy. So you pick up, you know, baby walkers and all kinds of toys, and they're brightly colored and they're hard plastic, and they're not durable enough for the aggressive chewer adult dog. So you probably don't want them in with mom if you've got a lab that eats everything, but they're fun. They make interesting noises, and you can do variability. And I think both Sophia Yin and Ian Dunbar, as veterinarians that talk a lot about behavior and development, talk about 100 experiences in 100 days. So those are some things that you can do really early, is just start rotating those toys in and out. I throw them in the dishwasher or the washing machine, just depending on what they are, because of course they're going to get soiled with food and poop and all kinds of stuff. So I make sure that they're clean. But I do that. And from very young on, even before we start doing toys, even before their eyes are open, I have a series of 11 bath mats that are all different sizes, shapes, colors, textures. The mesh ones I put under the puppies when they're really young because the urine runs through and so they stay dry. When you're in that transition period between when mom stops cleaning them, that 2 to 4 week transition period when they start urinating on their own, they stay dry. And it doesn't soak into a pad directly on their skin, so it's cleaner and neater. And those, again, can go in the washing machine. But I went to Walmart during COVID, and they had 11 styles of bath mats. They had some with bristles, they had some that were shiny, some with round holes, some with square holes, some were dark colored, some were light colored. Just this whole variety. And again, I throw them in my washing machine when they get soiled, and then I hang them to dry. And I have 2 sets so that they can rotate through. And you've just given now a puppy 11 different surfaces. So of the 100 experiences you need to do in 100 days, you just did 10% of them with a bath mat. Like, it's really easy. But I've found raising my service dogs that if they're not familiar with certain textures underfoot, certain visions underfoot, it can be really difficult for them to maneuver through basic society, things that we don't really think about. So I do those. I do the toys. I do a little mini, a lot of people have probably seen these little mini agility sets where they have a little tiny dog walk that's like 3 inches off the ground and a little tiny teeter. You can buy kids' chairs that are little teeter chairs. They're library chairs that stack together. You can buy those wobble boards that people use
boards.
For
exercise. That's the puppies love the wobble boards. Even the Spinoni, who are not nearly as active as the wire hairs, they love that wobble board. And the other one we have is one of the kids where it's 2 steps up and a slide down. Oh my God, they love that. Tunnels, like the cat tunnels. And then they run and they play and they hide. I have a video from one of the wire hair litters that I had set them up this whole course. This is a little bit later in their development. But they had this whole thing where they had to go up the stairs, slide down the ramp, and go through the tunnel to get out of the pen.
Yeah, it's a blast. And if you look at the kids' toys, you can find them on Facebook Marketplace. You can find them at the curb. You can find them at a garage sale, a rummage sale, tag sale, whatever they call them where you live. There's so many to choose from. And they're bright and they're fun and they're easy to keep clean because they're hard plastic. You can leave some of them outside. They weather just fine. Like the little tyke stuff, I just leave out in the yard because it's meant to be weatherproof. And the puppies just, they have so much fun and it's so interesting to see.
I just love watching them problem solve. So have you ever seen the ones, and if you guys haven't seen it, you can find these online. You can Google it. They're like the plastic mats that are a piano that the puppies run across them and it plays a song.
Yes.
OMFG is all I got to say about it. The first time I found one of those and put it with a litter of puppies was the cutest thing I've ever seen in my life. And they startle a little bit, but that's kind of the idea that we're doing at baby age, right? You just throw that on the ground and they're running around and the first time they touch it and it makes a noise, they jump a little bit, but then they go back and they do it on purpose. And watching them figure that out, whole. Mm-hmm. You have to take it out, at least in my breed, eventually, because they think
they'll chew it more with it. Well, yeah. Yeah. And then fruits and vegetables, I do a lot with those. So other than grapes and raisins, there's almost everything that you can give to them. I will take a cantaloupe or a honeydew melon, cut it in half, scoop out the seeds, and then section it like a grapefruit, put it in. I'll put in cherry tomatoes. I'll put in broccoli and lettuce and cauliflower and all kinds of stuff. And they just have so much fun with it. And it's all these, again, different textures, different flavors, another 10 experiences or 20 experiences, depending on the fruits and vegetables that you use. Sometimes we were talking about this yesterday, the grocery stores have a section of the grocery produce department that will have the discounted fruits and vegetables that may not be quite as beautiful, but they're absolutely fine. They're not moldy or slimy or gross or anything. So you can pick those up. Carrots, celery, just there's so many fun things. But the melon, I had a litter of farm dog puppies that I did the melon. I had a corgi litter and a farm dog litter at the same time. So I had them together. And the following summer, the person who took one of the farm dog puppies called me and she said, "Did you give these puppies cantaloupe?" And I said, "No, but I gave them honeydew." And she said, "I cut into a melon the other day and he went crazy. He smelled it. It was like, woo." He probably had this whole flashback to his childhood. So it really is fun.
To me, that feels like they'd get really sticky.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, they lick each other. Mom licks them off. It's all good. But it gives them opportunities. Cherry tomatoes, they chase around. They roll around the floor.
Carrots. I love carrots. Carrots are my favorite. And, you know, the other one, particularly in the summer, and my dogs are crazy about it, ice cubes.
Yes.
They love water bottles. The ice cubes. Yep. And empty plastic water bottles with the lids and the rings off. Cardboard box. I mean, I don't spend money on puppy toys. I just don't.
No. No, and the laundry soap bottle.
They just want to play with a cardboard box.
Right. The empty laundry bottle, rinse it out. Don't give them a bleach bottle. Don't give them a disinfectant bottle, but your Tide bottle, rinse it out good. Throw it out there. It's got a handle on it. They can pick it up and carry it around. They think they're king of the hill.
Juice jugs. You know, the one- they love those juice jugs. Oh, yeah. Kim goes through gallons of cran raspberry juice. That's just like what he drinks. And so it's the same thing. They've got a handle, and that's everybody's favorite toy up into adulthood. I just throw them out in the yard or up in the runs, and they run and play and make noise, and they think
they're really cool. So a lot of our breeders are now required to have an enrichment program, and they just need to have something written. And it doesn't have to be complicated and expensive. It just has to be some simple things like you built a teeter out of a piece of PVC planking from a deck and a piece of PVC tubing. So it teeters at $10, you can buy a rocking puppy chair on Amazon. It's not hard. It's not expensive. They're easy to disinfect, easy to keep clean. And these are so interesting to the puppies. And that's what we need to do, is keep them engaged, give them new experiences all the time, because as they mature, they may not know exactly what they've seen before. But now, dogs aren't generalized learners, according to Ian Dunbar. Right. They are specific learners. So they aren't going to generalize some of the stuff, but they will have seen some of this stuff before. They will have felt the surface move under their feet before. They will not
startled and recovered from it in a safe environment, I think, is a big piece of it. You know, the other thing, we're just talking, you know, all the different things. Do you do adventure boxes? I do. I usually don't give them at 4 weeks. I usually give them at about five. But I love the adventure boxes and watching them play with the different things. And you can have so much fun building, again, for $20. You know, this PVC, hang all the doodads. It's hysterical. It's good.
Right. Fun. Once you have the basic frame of it built, it's usually built as a box, as a rectangle, so that it's self-supporting. But I've hung things like metal spoons and plastic spoons. And my favorite thing that we haven't talked about is mirrors, a hand mirror that you can hang, or a full-length mirror that you lay on the outside of the X-Pen so they can see themselves through it. They look at themselves and they look. So it's not expensive to do this stuff. A mirror at Walmart is $10. You know, they're not expensive, but things that make noise, things that move, things that you can take a garden hose and cut it into pieces. You can use tennis balls. You can use stuff that normal people throw away, get repurposed into an adventure box for the puppies. So there's just a lot of variety that you can give them. And it's
not obviously, I mean, you know, use some common sense. But yeah, we survived. I can't even think about how many litters in the last few years. And they're just great.
You can just hang things with chain off of them. It doesn't have to be complicated. And then you just get a shower curtain hook and replace the plastic spoon with a metal spoon and replace measuring cups and pans.
That's my favorite.
There's just stuff, you know, you go to Menards or Walmart or
Dollar Store is my favorite.
The dollar store, yeah. And you wander down the aisles and you just chuck stuff in your cart and you look in your cart and for $20, you have just changed their world. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty great.
And household noises, I start at 4 weeks, right? So they've had an audio loop. They've started being introduced to, you know, whatever it is, whether it's different fireworks or, you know, some of that stuff. Mm-hmm. We start on low volume early, 3 weeks. But at this point, they're getting vacuum cleaners and the television and, you know, the washer and dryer and all the things that happen in a household. I start at this age too.
Right. And sometimes there are things you don't even think about, like the noise a ketchup bottle makes when it gets close to empty. It makes a squirty noise. The popcorn popper, the hair dryer. I've had dogs
that run hair dryers on them. They think that's cool.
Yeah, but if they haven't heard it before and they go into somebody's house, like, I don't blow dry my hair. It dries in the car on the way to work with the window down. But if they go to a household
that when it's 20 below, yes, I know you.
You know, it's crispy, but it works. So it's such an experience for them if they've never had the experience to do it. Because like my farm dogs don't need to be blown dry. I don't have to worry about grooming them. But the dogs that you're going to groom, absolutely. Or if you're just going to have them in a household, those air popcorn poppers, they make some noises. Air fryers, they make noise. So there's things that we didn't even have 10 years ago in our houses that are now noisy. So think about those things. And again, introduce it so that it's at a distance and it starts off soft. Don't just put the puppy in front of it and say, deal with it. But give them the opportunity to kind of slowly acclimate to that sound, just like when you turn the sound on for thunderstorms. Now, we had terrible storms here last night, but it's not just the thunder. It's the lightning. It's the barometric pressure changes. Some of those things are really hard to replicate. But essentially, if that experience happens, you just don't react to it. You know, if there's fireworks, I was out at midnight on January 1st, New Year's Eve. I was like, oops, I probably should have waited 5 minutes to come out, but okay. So you just have to be cool about it, because if you overreact to the sound of a storm or the sound of something, your puppies are going to feed off of that. I had a client that was really good at training her dogs to be terrified of thunderstorms, because she'd sit at the kitchen table with a cup of coffee and the radio on and just rock back and forth terrified. So if she was doing that, then the dogs were also going, whoa, I don't know what's wrong with this one. I need to pay attention. So just be really aware that your reaction to things are super important. Umbrellas, you know, things you don't even think of, throw off dogs.
That point that you just made is a point that I make to people throughout the dog's lives, right? Starting at 4 weeks old and taking them all the way through their life. They look to us. We are their leaders. And if our reaction is, the dog's reaction is going to mimic that. And if our reaction is meh, even if the dog is startled, they'll look at you and you can watch them do it. They'll look at you, see that you are not reacting. And if you just stand there, let them do whatever reaction they're going to do, and they look at you and you're not having a reaction, within 3 to 5 minutes, any dog will just say, okay, all right, it's fine.
Right. But if you have a situation that is predictable, you want to make sure that you have their attention in advance with a food treat, a tennis ball, something that you can redirect them with. So if you know something's going to happen, then be prepared for it. If you're not prepared, because you can't be prepared for everything, then you just have to control your own emotions and your own reactions. So that's absolutely true. And the one thing that I did put in the pandemic puppy book that I had an interviewer say he pulled out of there, the one sentence that he thought was interesting is, even when you think your puppies aren't learning something, they're learning something. So again, think about that as you are interacting with your puppies. If you are in the kitchen cooking and you're not paying attention and they just learned that they can pull something off the countertop and run around with it and then eat it, and you were preoccupied with dinner or the doorbell or the kids at homework or whatever, and you didn't see it, they just learned that they can do that over and over and over again. So it's hard.
It's the same thing when you crate train them, right? They, you have taught them that if they scream at the top of their lungs long enough and loud enough, you will let them out. They learned.
they learned it
push your buttons.
And so that's the hard part, is you've got to realize that anything that's happening, they are learning, whether it's something you want them to. And you are maybe spending 10 minutes a day, 20 minutes a day, 30 minutes a day training them, and they are spending the other 23 hours and 30 minutes figuring out other things. So it's like after a surgical procedure, we put them in a lot of our surgical suits now instead of Elizabethan collars. We want you to practice putting puppies in those, dogs in those surgical suits, the onesies, those kinds of things, before they have to have a surgical procedure. And we spend 30 seconds popping them into it, putting little snaps on, turn around and walk away. The puppy now has 23 hours and 55 minutes to go, I'm going to get out of this, or the bandage, or whatever. So think about those things. What do you need your dog to learn to do in your life? And you may not predict everything that's going to happen in your life. I had a couple that came in during COVID with a dog to be neutered, and they said, well, he's never been alone. I said, what do you mean he's never been alone? We have never left him alone. One of us has been home with him his entire life. He was now 10 months old. I said to them, an older couple, I said, you know, at some point he's going to have to learn to be alone. Oh no, we'll always be with him. I said, at some point, one of you is going to end up in the hospital. One of you is going to end up dead. I mean, let's face it, when you're 75, the dog may outlive you. So at some point, you're going to have to figure out that this dog needs to learn how the world works. Oh no, that's never going to happen. Okay, well, good luck with that. Because, you know, it's not a perfect world. Somebody's going to end up with a wedding, a funeral, a hospitalization, a trip that was unexpected. The dog is going to have to learn something. So take them to the boarding kennel when they're young enough to be vaccinated, but learn that they can stay for a few hours and you'll come pick them up and they aren't going to, you know, have a meltdown because of it. So all the things in their life, like make a list of the things that your dog needs to have for skills and start working on it so that they have that skill set when it's encountered and you're not reaching for a bottle of pills for everything that happens for anxiety, because they shouldn't have to live on anti-anxiety medication.
No, just because you do doesn't mean the dog should.
Well, that's a different conversation.
That's all another conversation. Oh my God. All right. Well, Marty, thank you so much. As always, you are a gift and a treasure. And
thank you.
We appreciate you so much here at Pure Dog Talk.
Thank you. It's a fun thing.
All right, crew. I hear from folks pretty much daily asking for a specific topic or for a series of podcasts on a topic. So ask and you shall receive. I've done all the hard work. I've sorted, searched, and compiled 8 different albums from the archives on our most popular topics. And when I say there's a podcast for that, I ain't just a woofin'. Getting yours today is super simple. Just jump on puredogtalk.com/store and click the PDT albums image. And when you're in there, you're going to find a collection of veterinary voices. You're going to find a collection for breeding and whelping hands-on. You'll find Pure Dog Talk University on dog breeding. Love the breeds. Up your game. Owner handlers, the interviews, events and sports. There is so much there. And once you're in those links, you'll be able to read the details of the topic. For a special introductory price of $1.99, you get a link to dozens, up to more than 100 episodes on these specific topics. And while you're there, if you or a friend or family member are just getting started, even just starting a search for your first well-bred, purebred dog, you can also check out Auntie Laura's Beginner's Guide to Show Dogs at puredogtalk.com/book to get the foundational Pure Dog Talk episodes with bonus tracks. So hop on it, y'all. These special prices will not last. As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.